I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening. Welcome to Shambhala Center's Satsang this evening. It's Thanksgiving in the States for those of you in the Americas. I thank you for coming tonight and listening. I know that there are lots of other things you could be doing, and we certainly appreciate having you with us again for Satsang. Let's get started with a protection. If I can ask everybody to take a deep breath, get yourself centered. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower bodies not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower vehicles. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light for each one of us. I ask that that Christ light surround us and that these tubes of light go down to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to this group. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Wonderful. So I am joined once again by PLAN. She's with me tonight. We're going to do things a little differently tonight, given that it's Thanksgiving, and I kind of have this thing in my head tonight about kind of functioning in a state of gratitude. So I think we'll keep it a little conversational this evening, and I'm going to open it up to PLAN to jump in wherever she feels like she needs to for further clarification. Sometimes I get, you know, moving and some people need to stop me if I say something and it's going beyond you, or and she has a good gauge on where most of our listeners would kind of come in at. So if I need to be stopped, that is her job. And so we'll just get started. PLAN, did you have anything specific that you wanted to bring forward right from the beginning?
Well, one thing that I did want to get into before we touched on gratitude, and I think this would be a good baseline to start with, is last week you touched on what happened in the moment of perceived separation. Mm-hmm. So can you elaborate on that some more?
Yeah, and it's important. This is one of those things that, you think you sound like a broken record, but you can never hear this enough because it's, she's laughing over here because you really can't. Okay, so let's go back to the moment of what we would call like the fall, you know, the fall of consciousness. In a moment, and you have to bear with me because language itself is polarized. So when I say in a moment, that's not accurate. There is only the one eternal moment. But so, you know, pardon my language here. But in a moment, consciousness had an experience. And the experience that it had was, I'll keep it extremely basic tonight. So let's look at it from a place as if you imagine for a moment that you are part of all that is. I'm going to take this, actually, this is a good way to do this. I'll take this back to the concept of growing within a mother's womb. Okay. For that baby that is growing inside a mother's womb, the mother is part of the baby, right? And the atmosphere that the baby is living in, everything that it's experiencing with its senses, it's all part of it. It has no concept that this thing, that this woman who's carrying the child, is separate from the child. There's no concept of that at all. So all it knows is this is what it is. The sum total of what it is are all these things that it experiences. And then through the birthing process, and especially at the moment of birth, now this little consciousness has a completely different experience where it can literally look back on what birthed it. And in that moment, if we look at it from the perspective of birthing a baby, now imagine consciousness is the baby. In that moment, the baby would experience a sense of detachment, a sense of being separate from where it was, and a whole new understanding of, you know, and even confusion about who it is and what its place is. So if we look at consciousness in general, we can say that consciousness had that experience. And that experience was that it was part of something, and that it wouldn't even necessarily know what it was part of because it's all it knows, correct? So if imagine it this way, if you are all that is, how do you know what you are, right? Because there's nothing to bounce that off of, right? Here in polarity, you know you're kind because you know the meaning of being unkind, right? Okay, so if you're all that is, then it leaves room for what are you and what are you not, if there's such a thing. So consciousness has this experience where all of a sudden it believes that it can be separate from everything that it actually is, which is all things. But it has the experience of the baby. And in that experience, consciousness is in the space of, oh, I'm this now. I'm me. So in that moment, all of these, like I said to you last week, all of these things happen. Literally, they come into being simultaneously. But the most important thing that actually happened in that experience is what we refer to as the primal imprint. And I want you to, if you can just imagine for a moment that you are, let's say you are the baby, right? And in the moment, if the baby was capable of, you know, forming thought the way we do in reasoning, what would the baby say in that moment when it's expelled out of the mother's body? Questions would arise, certainly. There would be a sense of surprise, of course. How could there not be? And some confusion. What's going on? I don't understand what happened. And where am I? And, you know, all of these questions come forward. And then other states of mind all come into play. And it's what we call a downward spiral. It's an energetic, you can literally look at it as if it's an energetic line that's spiraling downward. And the states of mind follow it. And the states of mind follow this spiral downward. Ultimately, the bottom of that spiral is death at the very, very bottom. Okay. Mind the lower mind is born out of this, you know, state of consciousness. And the lower mind in this spiraling has a moment, you know, I'm guessing there's probably a moment of panic, right? For the baby, right? If you're the baby and all of a sudden all this happened, it's like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And there's probably a moment of panic. There's probably fear. Think about all the things that would happen, right? But at some point, something wants to right itself and go, oh, I'll go back, right? Because that was safe. That was perfect. It was beautiful. It was all these things. And now you have this experience I'm out here all by myself and I want to go back. And so other states of mind actually come into being from that swing. It's that concept that, oh, I'll move back to the mother, or in this case for consciousness, back to the light. And then other states of mind come in. And then we call that the upward spiral. What happens is, in the experience of consciousness, when it goes back to go back to the light, it can't get to it. And with my students, I always use like a pretend you're moving back to the light. And it's like, you feel like you're just about to merge into it. And then you hit like a glass wall, something you don't even see, and you bounce off and away. And therein begins the next spiral. So in the beginning, what may have happened that caused a sense of surprise, now the second time around, when you have an expectation that you're going to go back to where you were, now when you bounce off, it moves from surprise to shock, because you had a full expectation that this is what's going to happen and it didn't happen. Now you're shocked. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, like what just happened? Why didn't that work? Right. Yeah. And now it starts all over again. And this is the experience of consciousness, meaning, you know, what everyone listening to the program and everyone walking the planet is existing in every day. It's a program. And for those of you who are into computers, there really is no better way to describe it other than a program. You know, the programmer set this whole thing in motion and said, this is where it starts, and it loops back in on itself. And every time it comes back to the top, it starts over again. And that's what's going on here, right? Now, sometimes the loop looks like a really elongated loop, and sometimes it looks like a shortened little circle loop. It all depends on the person's particular patterning, okay? But being birthed here, I'm sure you're all familiar with the concept that you come in with your veils down, right? People have heard that certainly, in spiritual circles. And that's exactly what this is referring to, that just being birthed here in this reality, means that you come in, you know, not remembering who you are. And you come in already as part of the collective of this polarized system. So you're already attached to it. Okay. And then at that point, so what we would call the primal imprint it imprinted itself on you at birth. And then through the course of, growing and becoming a small child, you know, up to the age of 5, maybe 7 around the latest, but usually about the age of 5, then your personal patterning is all put in place. And that is put in place by primary caregivers. Usually it's the parents primarily. Sometimes they're grandparents or aunts and uncles. Foster care parents, you know, siblings, things like that. And what you're learning in all of that experience, like you can think of it as the child is a little sponge, right? And it's soaking up everything that's going on. Now, remember, it's soaking up everything, not just what it can sense with its 5 senses, but everything it's capable of sensing, which transcends that, right? So it's getting the energetics, it's getting everything that's going on around it. And the little being starts to try to make what sense it can of it. Okay. And the thing that happens is that it starts to, the lower mind is very, adept, and it starts to witness things that are happening where there seems to be, an opposition taking place with people in its surroundings. So we can say that the child would watch mommy and daddy have an argument, right? And in that, they're actually witnessing the polarization of these two people, because one person thinks one thing, one person thinks the other, and that's what's leading to the argument, because they're both holding their own sides. And the child will watch very intently, and it will see that at the end of the argument, one of those people won, okay? One, either mom or dad, came out on top, and it's obvious, you know, who's the victor, right? And the child witnesses all of this, and it remembers everything. So again, back to the computer thing, you know, that you can look at everything that comes in is all stored in your database. So everything is witnessed and tucked away until you need it later.
So can I ask a question about that? Because you were saying...
Are you on?
That's sorry. Sorry. Okay. So you were saying before that at the time of what we perceived as separation, that, you know, we, since we don't know what's going on, we kind of see it as what just happened, who am I? So just going forward, would it seem as though, like, that's, because it just kind of dawned on me, like, this is one reason why we're constantly like, what is my purpose? Who am I? Things like this. So even as a child with this whole thing that you're describing now, it's that search for who am I? What am I?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Because the experience is what you've lost, right? That's mm-hmm. the only piece that you, you meaning just consciousness itself, the only piece, the lower mind experience is that's what I lost. So what's left?
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I came from. So I'd like to think that I'm that, but here I am and I'm not part of that and I can't get back to that. So, I mean, imagine sit in the space of, okay, so think of it this way. We'll relate this to a dog, right? Dogs are incredibly loving creatures and a dog will run to its master. And let's say that dog gets kicked. Initially, what's the experience for the dog? Like, oh my goodness, but it'll run right back to the master, right? To go back to that source of love. Well, if that dog gets kicked over and over and over again, at some point that dog gives up, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a point where the dog realizes it's not doing me any good anymore. Okay. This is exactly what's happened with lower mind. It does the same thing. It's always wanting to get back to, its source, but at the same time, it doesn't believe it can. So can mm-hmm. you see, yes. the struggle that's, it's all, mm-hmm. it's in there and there's no way out of it, right? Because every time it tries to get back, it experiences defeat. And what that sets up is an expectation that it really doesn't matter how hard you try. You can't win. You can't get back. Right. And that's what really sits there beneath everything. And people who like, I think I posted something on Facebook not all that long ago, but it was about our expectation and looking at people who have a desire for something. Okay. Your desire is great, but what's your expectation that you're going to get it? Right. And what people, when they really are capable of going very deep and looking, is that they see that ultimately what's really, really sitting down in the bottom is that they don't think that they can, you know? So yeah. that's what's ruling what's happening in your outside reality. Remember, it's the unconscious mind is what's out picturing here. And that's what you're experiencing as your physical world. So if your expectation, even though your desire is there to have it, but your underlying expectation says, I don't deserve it, or that's impossible, that's a big one. That's impossible, right? If that's what's sitting there, how can you create anything other than that, right? That's what's ruling it. So yeah, so that's the experience of the lower mind. And when I say the lower mind, I'm talking to all of you. That's your personal self, all right? It is the lower mind. And the lower mind is singular. This is trippy. I sat with a student yesterday and you know, watched him hit walls when I was bringing this because everybody, you know, you think you're your thoughts and you think your thoughts are yours and they aren't, right? There's only one mind. It is singular and you are that radio antenna that tunes in, but those thoughts aren't yours. They aren't coming out of you, so to speak, right? And so mind is just singular. There is one program. There is one story playing out here on this planet. And that story is the experience of consciousness when it thought that it actually separated from God. Okay. So here's your challenge. In every situation you come into in your world, whenever you see something that is opposing you, okay, if you're angry at your spouse or you're angry at someone you work with, or you're angry at the weather because it's raining on a day that you want it to be sunny. It doesn't matter what the opposing side is, whatever it is, that opposing side represents the light. Capital L. Okay. Meaning God.
Okay. But did you want to go back to the explanation about the child? And watching his parents and picking the winning side?
Yes, because this is how part of the programming gets done. That in the experience of the child witnesses what we call the winning position. Okay, and the child will program itself after the winning position, meaning that, let's say in a particular argument, dad won out and mom is sulking and she's in the kitchen now, you know, like putting the dishes away really loud. Acting like very passive aggressive. So the child witnesses that. It will program itself after what dad did, meaning that consciously it will take that on. So when it moves into a situation in its own world where its perception is that a similar situation is coming and it has to find a way to relate to the situation, it will purposely pick the father's position. But here's the big but. the other side, mom's side, was programmed to just as strongly, and it was programmed unconsciously. Okay. So little Johnny here is going to pick one side that's his. The other side, he says he doesn't like. It didn't work, right? It's not effective, but it still gets programmed. And where it comes out is that every time little Johnny gets triggered, this is what happens. The reactive mind takes over, and now little Johnny functions from mom's patterning. Okay? Yes. You see it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, and that's important to see, because you all are doing this, whether you're aware of it or not. You all are doing this. And now that I just gave you this little nugget, now you can start to look at your life and say, oh, let's look back to when I was a kid. You know, so you can say, when I'm angry, why do I function a certain way? Oh, and here's a perfect example. If we look at abuse victims, why is it that those who are abused end up being abusers? Right? Yes. I mean, it seems like it's so contradictory. I mean, if you're abused, you know the feeling of being abused. And heavens, you would never want to put that on someone else. But they can't stop themselves. And why is that? Because the reactive mind takes over, and that's where they function from. It doesn't matter how much they hate it. What wants to happen is for that patterning to come forward. Okay. And then, of course, they feel horrible guilt and remorse after, because they have already polarized so strongly against the action that they can't not feel horrible remorse, but it won't stop them from doing it. The reactive mind is incredibly strong. When it gets triggered, it takes over, and there is no stopping it. And many of you, I'm sure, know the look of someone, men especially, can get into a space of rage where you see in their eyes, it's like they have left the building, you know?
Yeah.
you know that look? You know, most of us have seen that in someone. Usually it's in a father where you see it, but they can get so angry that you can see it in their eyes. It's like, oh, that person's not even there anymore. Like, I don't even know who this is screaming at me or hitting me or whatever it is, but it's like not even him. And that's very accurate. That's exactly what happens. It takes over, and it's like they just can't reason at that point. You just can't reason. So one of the we're bouncing all over tonight, aren't we? One of the best things that you can do is actually if you struggle with anger, but this holds true for anybody, but really, if you struggle with anger to the point where if you get triggered, you feel like you have to do something, the absolute best thing you can do is to go find a place where you can sit and be away from people, whatever, and just sit and don't move. Don't do anything, but just sit. It will be probably the hardest about 5 minutes of your life, because the energy is, you have done this. I see. The energies. Now, remember, I talked to you before, like the quantum physics holds a lot into our work, and the physics of the body, like all of it, it all comes together into this beautiful package. But what is happening is that when a belief is triggered, okay, by some kind of opposing force, and now you stand in a place where you have to go against the opposing side. You have to maintain your own position, because, you know, heaven forbid our beliefs get challenged, right? You know, I know what's right and what's real, and don't tell me anything different. And I'm going to hold that position, right? So, and that's where everybody stands. Even if you think you're open-minded, I promise you, you're holding a lot of that. Everybody does. So in these moments, what happens is you get challenged, and then this reaction kind of takes over. And, I just completely bear with me, because these things come and go, and I forgot where I was coming from with this. Oh, sitting still. Okay. So when it comes, if you can detach yourself from the situation. Now I'll use myself as an example. Okay. I have three children. So let's use my oldest child of the three. He's the one who's most likely to trigger me. Right. So let's say that my oldest triggers me. And in that moment, if I can stop myself from taking some kind of action against him that is not, you know, productive, certainly, and remove myself from the situation and go sit, what happens is it creates an interesting situation. In the moment when you've been triggered, the chemicals and the synapses all start firing in the brain. Remember, the synapses are all created in this incredibly complex matrix, and it's all based on all the beliefs that you hold and all the roles that you've taken on for yourself. And so it's all this huge spider webby mishmash of synapses that will fire, and they'll fire in a particular order based on whatever belief it is that's getting challenged. So when they fire, the brain sends out this chemical cocktail that is directly related to whatever has been challenged. Okay. So if you're being challenged with jealousy, that's going to be a completely different reaction chemically in your body than if you're being challenged with
love.
Oh, well, I wouldn't call that a challenge. How about jealousy? Did I say jealousy first?
You did say jealousy.
Okay, how about the second one? How about embarrassment? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So each one is going to have its own thing. Well, with something like anger, and if you go really deep and take it to rage, that chemical martini is really potent, right? Really, really potent. And the brain sends these chemicals out into the bloodstream. And what the chemicals do is they literally look for receptor sites where these chemicals can dock in. And for those of you, if you want a better understanding than I'm going to give you in this short time, I would highly recommend watching What the Bleep Do We Know, because this is perfectly described in that movie. But these things are all running, so they're looking for these receptor sites. And what happens is when you take action normally, okay, and for those of you who already have an understanding of what the swing is, which we haven't gotten to yet, but when you take action, that actually is the swing. It will take you out of the negative states of mind, and it will start swinging you over to the positive states of mind. Literally, concurrently with that action is the docking of the chemicals into these receptor sites, and endorphins get released. So when this happens, you're getting an endorphin rush, right, in the body. That's why you feel better. So when someone is enraged and they haul off and hit a person, literally taking that action and the hitting, even though they can say that consciously they don't think it's the right thing to do, it actually makes them feel better because all of those chemicals had an opportunity to dock in the body, the endorphins are released, and you actually experience that. Now, people will argue with you that that's not what's happening. Yeah, I love the saying, you know, the parent who would, in the olden times, they would like get a switch and they'd, you know, hit their kids with a switch and they'd say, "This, believe me, this hurts me more than it does you," right? Oh, no, I don't think it really does, right? Because you're actually getting, now you'll feel guilty about it after, but in the moment, it actually is serving to make you feel better, okay? You wouldn't continue to do it if it didn't serve you in some way, all right? Sitting still is a beautiful thing because the chemicals have nowhere to dock, right? Because you've taken that component out. You've taken it out where you're allowing yourself to do anything to take action with that. If you're just sitting and not running through the whole scenario in your head and blaming the person and sitting in judgment, if you just sit and just witness the energy, right? Let the observer just witness the energy. What you'll find is something very specific happens. It's the energy in the body, it spirals, right? And I keep talking about the downward spiral. Well, you will feel it in the body, spiraling. And it can be, agonizing to sit in it because it's like everything in your being just wants to get up and do something or wants to yell or wants to something. But if you don't allow it, what you will witness is that after a little bit of time, it's like once that energy recognizes it has nowhere to dock, it literally has to dissipate and it will leave you. And it will leave you and it'll just be gone. And then at that point, now you're capable of moving back into the situation from a clear place. Yeah. Now you can be clear again. You can reason and all these things that you couldn't do when you were in a reactive state. Okay. So your homework assignment is to start to sit and just allow the energy and witness the energy. You'll learn a lot about yourself just in doing that. You know, you learn an awful lot about how you're functioning. What we end up doing is hurting the people that we love the most. And it's because we, you know, up until this point, haven't been capable of doing anything other than what we've done. And we can't see our own hurtfulness. That's probably the best way to say it. We can't see it. We can't witness it because we're so self-righteous in how we're functioning. So if I see something in another person in my family sees something else, you know, it's almost like I feel like I owe it to them to show them how they're wrong. Right. And it's a very selfish way to function, but that's how everybody functions. You know, like, no, you're wrong. And this is how it is. And the way that people go about doing it is very hurtful. You know, it's very diminishing to people. And there are ways that we can show someone that their understanding could be clearer, right? Without diminishing them, without being harsh. Just the way parents tend to be with their kids is often just very short, just kind of cut them off and know you're wrong and there it is, right? And what they can't experience is that they can't stand in the space of the child who just got hit with the energy of that. And now they feel, you know, like they're 2 inches tall. They just want to curl up and hide someplace. But we can't experience that because we're so in our own thing. And we can justify our actions and we can say, oh, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Well, in our own reality, maybe it doesn't, but you're not sitting in the reality of the other person. And that's the beauty of doing deep work is that you become capable of actually standing on both sides. And remember I said, you know, I've said right from the very beginning that we aren't here to change anything. We're here to see through it. So you're not doing this from a space of, I don't want to be that way anymore so much as I want to understand why it's all happening. And when you truly see it and understand what's going on, then the stuff that isn't loving, it just falls away. And it does change, right? But you aren't the one trying to change it. Do you see the difference? Because there's a difference there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Which that would be a perfect segue into gratitude, because one thing that I've noticed when you said that you wanted to talk about that tonight, I've thought about gratitude and I've realized that how I saw gratitude before I started the work and the way I see it now is completely different. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's because we're moving from a place of selfishness, really. It's still conditional. Mm-hmm. So you said you want to talk about gratitude. So I'm excited about that.
Well, why don't you've been with me for quite some time and, you've done very deep work. So why don't you share with us what your experience was?
You know, when I look back on what I was grateful for back then, it was things like, you know, I would say like, I'm grateful for my family and things like that. But the way I see everyone now is so different than the way I saw them back then, you know? So, and I realized that I really wasn't grateful for them. Mm-hmm. They feel the need more than anything, really, what I thought I needed at the time. Now, I'm grateful for the experiences that they provide. You know, just the things that I've been able to see. And I'm grateful for, I can see them for who they are, and I can see the love that they really have for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful for them allowing me to love them, quote unquote, better, but, you know, to really love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing with gratitude, it's great that you bring it up the way you have, is, you know, gratitude is programmed into you as something that you should have, right?
Ha ha ha.
Aha. You know, you have a kid sitting at the table who doesn't want to eat his mashed potatoes, and you say, you should be grateful you have those mashed potatoes. There are children in China who would kill for them. I mean, how many people have heard something like that, right? So let's look at it. That makes an impact on a kid. It makes a really big, I mean, these things that what you don't recognize is that your words have such power, and you take a small child who doesn't have the wisdom, the experience, and everything is new to them. And all of this stuff is just being layered and layered and layered on. And it's building who that child is going to come up and be in the world. So now let's look at gratitude. Well, you should be grateful you have that. That's something that ran in this house with the electronics things, right? Kids have one electronic thing, and then now I need the next thing, and the next thing, this thing. And you want to say, well, you should be grateful you've got what you've got. When we were kids, we didn't have that. You know, we were lucky when we got the first Atari, and we had that for 10 years, and you didn't have anything. That was it, right? And it's easy to say it, right? But what does it do? What is it that it actually is creating in the child, right? It's programmed. It's all programmed. So now we're adults, and we're looking at what am I grateful for in my life? And so, you know, it's Thanksgiving. It's a perfect day to look at it. What am I grateful for? And what are you really grateful for? You know, I mean, think about it. Are you grateful? What, you know, if to say I'm grateful for my children, but then at the table, you know, maybe you sit down to eat and it's like you're going to go around and say something everyone's thankful for the year. I'm thankful I have my children and blah, 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 you know, and then dinner is halfway over and one of your kids, you know, spills their milk and you're screaming at them. Already, right? How grateful are we really? Yeah. So it's like the story says one thing, but the actions say something very different. And I'm a big proponent for, you know, your actions speak far louder than your words, because that's the truth of it. It's very easy to say, I love you, but to act in a way that shows love is a very different thing, very different thing. So this is the thing with gratitude, that gratitude, you know, isn't something that, you know, in highest truth, it's part of your beingness. You know, I mean, think about it. You, when you are in your heart space, it's hard not to be grateful for anything. Really. I mean, everything you witness is pure magic. I mean, when you're really in your heart and you are in the space of the very deep understanding that everything you are experiencing is actually emerging out of you, right? And that this experience, you know, you come to a place where you recognize that you're only a thought. What am I? Well, I'm a thought, you know, in the mind of God, just a thought. And within that, you start to witness the pure magic of everything here, you know, to think that just energy itself can have the experience of physicality is completely mind blowing. You know, if you really, really stop and allow yourself to think about that, that everything here that you're looking at is just energy. It's light, right? It's light that somehow inside that brain gets turned into a picture. And now you're experiencing it as whatever you're going to call it, right? But the crazy thing is that the light never actually enters the head, right? That's what I said to someone yesterday. You know, this light coming in through that window doesn't actually go through your eyes and get into the back of the brain where the picture's made. It's dark in there. There's no light in there. How does that happen? How does that happen? And so in that space, oh my gosh, how could you not be grateful for everything? Just everything, you know? Yeah. And that gratitude comes from such a different place, you know, because it's like it just emerges from your love for everything, you know? It's like this thing that, wow, like even though you know, and it takes a long time to really get, not just the mental understanding is easy. Mental understandings always are, but it takes a while to have the actual experience where you know yourself to be God, right? And to really allow that to sink in and take and consume you. And, but before then you can actually have the understanding that I am God, right? And so, you know, you're part of the all that is having this experience here. I mean, what? I mean, it's still just for me to even talk about it. It blows my mind just to sit and talk about it, yeah. Because that's really what we're looking at here. what's happening here is a miracle beyond miracles, and everybody takes everything for granted. You know, you think you're so important in your daily life, and in the reality of just the physical universe, you're not even a speck. You know, if you look at our planet in the physical universe, it's not even a speck on the whole picture of what's out there. No, it's nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. And here we're all self-important, right? And that's how we function. Well, when you start to get an understanding of what's really going on out there, what's really going on in here, of course, they're both the same thing, right? It's like you find your place in it, and your place is so tiny. But at the same time, your place is the exact opposite, because you're all of it, right? And yes. from that space, how do you not walk through your life grateful for everything? I mean, everything. That means grateful for the car accident, right? Grateful for the person who's screaming at you at the grocery store because you took the last can of beans or something, right? Whatever it is, you know, you can look at that person who's screaming, and instead of taking it personally as an affront to you, you can look and say, well, of course, you know, if I was that person and I believed what I believed, of course, I'd be screaming too. Right. And so then instead of looking at that person and being offended by them, now we see them as, well, they're just being honest. Yeah. And why wouldn't you be grateful for their honesty? Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big one right there. Because the initial thing for everyone is that if you get triggered, especially if you have someone who's angry with you, it's like the walls go up and you're ready to fight, you know, and it doesn't need to be that. It's not personal to you. It's the program, right? We're always going to come back to that. It's the program. That person is just acting out of their pattern. You don't know what their story is, you know. You don't know why that can of green beans was so important to that person. Who's to say?
Yes. Right.
And then when you can stand in that place, maybe in that moment you decide to give it to them. You know, if it's worth getting that upset over, maybe they need it a whole lot more than you do, right? No big deal. I'll go buy some frozen ones. It doesn't matter. Or we'll have corn tonight, right? So it allows you to back up. Like, you know, you need to like get out of yourself. You really do. Everyone is so preoccupied with who I am, what I deserve, and what I need, and what you're not giving me, and what you should be giving me, and blah, blah, right? That we live in this really yucky, miserable space 95% of the time, and we have that little 5% window that pops in every now and again when we have fun. when we feel like we do have a sense of gratitude, you know, but it doesn't need to be that way. You know, it really doesn't. It doesn't at all. So is there anything else? I'm just trying to think. I have a specific song that I asked the guys at VBS if they would play for me tonight when we leave, because I think it speaks so beautifully to what we're actually talking about tonight. It's the concept that, you know, she says in the song, you know, I have failed you. She says, I closed my heart and I have failed you. And then she says, but I love you. How I love you. And I think that every time I hear this song, it really hits me to my core, because I've had that experience, the experience where you can actually witness what was going on with this person that we'll call, you know, me, and how I functioned. And I functioned from such a selfish place that I couldn't see how hurtful I was to you. And when you see that, what you see is that sense of, self-righteousness and indignation and all these things, what they do is it's an energetic that literally compresses itself around the heart space. The heart is always emanating out. It can't not do that. You know, it is the divine in you, and it knows nothing else but to do that. But the identification with the personal self and all of those beliefs that are attached to it actually constrict the heart so that it isn't capable of expressing out the way that it naturally would be. And when you come into these moments where you see how hurtful you have been, and of course you understand that it was very innocent. There was innocence behind it. You know, you did what you did because it was all you knew to do. I'm quoting Maya Angelou now, you know, but when you knew better, you did better. And that's the point, that we can sit in that space where we see, oh my gosh, like, look at how I treated you. And it just wasn't, but I love you, you know. I love you. So why would I do that? And then we see what was behind it. Again, we'll go back to the basic theory, domination, manipulation, and control. And that's what's always behind all of it. And then when we see that, now we can come from a space of true love where we embrace the other person, you know, and allow this thing to just kind of dissolve away that I was holding in place, this wall I was holding in place between me and you. And it allows for greater intimacy with everybody in your life. And it's a powerful, powerful thing. So the song is called Swing Low, Sail High. It is by the Waylon Jennies. I love them. They're fantastic. I would highly recommend going to Amazon and grabbing it if you can. But listen closely to the words. And I think that's about it for tonight. We thank you very much for being with us again. Next week, we'll be back with you Thursday night at 9:00. And maybe next week we'll actually open up the lines to some questions. Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay, excellent. Again, you can join us at theshambhalacenter.org and on Facebook at the Shambhala Center. Much love to you. And we'll see you next week.
You are divine.